Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. It's May 27th. I have Sam and Kevin in the studio with me. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Y'all have a good holiday weekend?
Great. I did a lot of grilling. Ate a bunch of good food. Can't beat it.
Yeah, it was too short.
Definitely, always.
Too short, but it was a good weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, so I saw a snippet on the news over the weekend. Have either of you ever been to Chicago?
I have not. I want to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chicago for a long time had the distinction of having three of the top five tallest buildings in the country, in the world. And I think they still have three of the top ten, but, you know, some bigger buildings have been built around the world. But there was always this contest to try and draw tourists to whatever building. And so a number of years ago, the Sears Tower, what used to be called the Sears Tower, built an extension made of glass so that you could walk out on the glass and look down. So the Hancock Center, which was like the fifth tallest building, not to be outdone, they've just opened a new attraction in their viewing deck. It's called Tilt.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so you stand at the window, and then it tilts out 45 degrees so that you're kind of looking down.
I wonder what that insurance policy looks like.
I'm not certain I would like that. I'm not too heights are not don't frighten me much, but that's pushing it.
Not if that ever goes wrong, yeah. It's going to go really wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of like the rides at
Six Flags.
At Six Flags that drop you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll do those rides, but one time, and then I'm done for the day.
Yeah. Don't need that. Yeah. Anyway, we have a return guest with us this morning, Ann Keaton. Ann is the president and owner of Grief to Relief. Welcome back. You were here only a month ago.
That's right. Thank you for having me back. Glad to be here.
It must have been a great show.
It was. It was a lot of fun.
Good reviews.
So we were hoping to have one of your families here with us, and that didn't happen this time, but we're going to cross our fingers and maybe do it again.
We will try again, absolutely.
But you have some additional new information you want to chat with us about this morning, so we'll get to that in a minute. But if you wouldn't mind just reminding our viewers a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, where you went to school, how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you. I grew up in Dunwoody, Georgia, so just around the corner from here. Graduated from Marist High School and University of Georgia. And back in 2004, I became a certified life coach through the Coaches Training Institute out of California. And I was working with a coaching client, life coaching client, whose mother had died when she was about 13 of cancer. And despite many years since that death, there was still a big hole in her heart where her mother had once been. And we started coaching around her mother. And I don't think either of us knew what we were getting into, but it was just the most profound, amazing work I'd ever had the privilege to do. And I said, wow, I want to do more grief work. But I didn't know anything about grief. And it seemed like if I was going to specialize in grief, I might should know something about it. And so I found the Grief Recovery Institute and got certified in their methodology back in 2011 and just fell head over heels in love with that and have still do some life coaching, but mostly specializing in the grief since then.
That's great. Tell our listening audience why you like this so much.
You know, what I love about this is it's this action-based experiential program for moving forward. And it's a skill set that people learn. And so I don't need people to come see me for, you know, an indeterminate amount of time. And it's not like, well, come see me for a couple months or 6 months or 6 years and maybe we'll make some progress. Like, I see people move forward every single week, you know, and with grief, mostly what we've heard in our lives are let go and move on. But nobody's actually told us how. Mm-hmm. And everybody's trying desperately to get better and to let go and move on. But we just haven't had the skill set for how. And so I'm literally teaching a psychoeducational skill set. Once people learn it, they never have to see me again. They can implement it over and over and over in their lives. And it's a skill set, really, that all of us need. but most of us don't have.
Yeah, I think the statement that you said that let go and move on, that's easily said. And for me, for a man, you know, okay, I'll fake it till I make it. And we do, most of us, but I'm not certain that's the most healthy approach.
Yeah. Well, and what happens is we think we're doing it, and then all of a sudden some other loss collapses on top of us, and then all that old stuff gets activated and you know, it really can dismantle us because we haven't recovered from the earlier losses, which we all stack up. There's no way around it. You know, I think some of us think, well, you know, if we're more evolved and more wise and stronger and better and healthier, that somehow we're not going to experience the loss. In fact, I don't know if I told you all the story last time or not. I may have. But after I got certified, I came back to Atlanta. I got certified in Tampa. And I said, oh, I am so clever and I'm so smart. I'm smarter than everybody else now that I know what and how to deal with grief. I won't have to have any. Well, 3 months later, my best friend died of esophageal cancer. About a month later, I got laid off. And 2 weeks later, my dog died. And it's just like, no, everybody's going to get it. You know, we're just all going to get it.
Yeah.
So being smart or well-intended or nice, does it?
Well, it doesn't. You're not immune to it just because you've studied it.
Yeah, and you won't get it just once, but
repeatedly.
It'll keep happening.
Right,
yeah.
And it tends to sort of happen like that, you know, where you get, like, just sucker punched time and time again really quickly. I was just talking to a woman yesterday who'd lost two cousins in a short order. Her husband had a stroke, and then a little baby niece died. And she's just she's feeling overwhelmed by it because it was each one in and of themselves was hard enough, but then you collapse four of those together in short order.
Absolutely.
Takes its toll.
Well, you were as we were beginning the discussion before the broadcast, you were mentioning that you had some specific things you wanted to address. So I'm going to throw you that carrot dangle that carrot and go for it.
All right, perfect. Well, what I want to do first is just review a little bit about what I'd said about the definitions of grief. And then, and of course, there's more information on the broadcast that we did before if anybody wants to go back and listen to that. And then I wanted to talk specifically about some of the losses, just two of them, that affect the senior population.
Okay.
But to review grief, the Grief Recovery Institute's definition of grief, primary definition, is conflicting feelings about a change or end in a familiar pattern or behavior. And what I love about that is, you know, a lot of people associate grief with death. But that definition doesn't say anything about death.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people associate grief with sadness. And that definition doesn't say anything about sadness. Mm-hmm. It says conflicting feelings. So it could be sadness. It could be anger. It could be hopelessness. It could be overwhelmed. It could be relief. It could be compassion. It could be fear. And most often those things are showing up practically within nanoseconds of each other. The other thing about grief is, number one, it's natural and normal. It's the emotional response to loss. So we have a spiritual system and an intellectual system and a physical system, but we also have this emotional system. And so intellectually, we can totally wrap our brains around the loss. For example, when my best friend died, you know, I desperately didn't want him to go on. I really didn't. He'd had a really bad time with esophageal cancer, and I desperately didn't want him to go on, and yet I desperately didn't actually want him to die, you know?
What a conflict of issues there.
It is. Yeah. It is. And no answer is a good answer. So you're feeling conflicted about something where there's no real good outcome. But intellectually, I could wrap my brain around the fact that what we hear all the time, oh, he's not suffering anymore, and that I didn't want him to go on. And yet emotionally, I can have a radically different response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to, you know, to pay attention to that distinction. Another example, which seems silly, but it was so true. After my husband at the time moved out, I had to change a light bulb. And physically, I was capable of changing that light bulb. And intellectually, I was capable of changing that light bulb. And indeed, I had changed lots of light bulbs. But emotionally, I desperately did not want to climb up on that chair and change that light bulb. You know, because it meant changing that light bulb right then. It meant changing all the light bulbs moving forward. It meant cutting the grass. It meant paying for the kids, feeding them, taking it. Like, there was a much bigger emotional response to that than there was intellectually. And so we need to know that about grief, that the emotional response may not make any sense to us intellectually, but it doesn't mean that emotional response isn't real or natural or normal or valid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the other thing about grief is that it really is the most universal and profound human experience. And as we said earlier, none of us are going to get through life without it. And we have to learn what to do with it so that it doesn't do us, if that makes if that makes sense.
I think that's the most universal and profound. I think that's a great definition. I mean, absolutely. Right. And again, you don't think of it in these terms, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's the thing that just takes us to our knees. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We're all looking at each other. You had mentioned that you had some specific things as it relates to the seniors.
Right.
So let's
go
move
with that.
There.
Yeah. Okay. So the definition, conflicting feelings about a change in a familiar pattern or behavior, right? There are over 40 different types of losses we could experience in a lifetime. I'm going to mention a few of them that relate specifically to seniors. And then I want to go focus on two of them. So, of course, death, mm-hmm. divorce, separation, end of a relationship, personal injury or illness, retirement, sexual difficulties, changes in financial status, which can be positive or negative, mm-hmm. change in sleeping habits, moving, mortgage, loan, foreclosure, revision of personal habits, change in residence, recreation, loss of control over body, loss of faith, safety, hope, confidence, independence, power.
It's funny when you were going through that, I'm in my mind, I'm clicking or checking off these issues, and I'm saying anxiety building, anxiety, until you get to, well, you said exercise. Well, and how's that anxiety building? And hope, how's that? So it doesn't have to be what we might consider, I guess, a negative or a negative issue.
Right, not at all. Good point, because it just says change in a familiar pattern or behavior. It doesn't say an unwanted change or doesn't say a negative change. I had a client who inherited a lot of money when her grandmother died, and it caused a lot of grief because all of a sudden what she had anticipated for her life was different, and what people were expecting from her now that she had access to this money was different. Mm-hmm. And while it was really good, it also made it very hard, so she had conflicting feelings. Plus, it was attached to the loss of her grandmother. So, like, I'm really grateful and happy to have this money, and yet I didn't want to lose this person, and now it's made these other relationships tricky. So even positive changes can cause grief.
Yeah. Interesting. I can now vision what you're saying, and you have a life, you have a day-to-day process. Mm-hmm. You get a large sum of money, which everyone's going, bring it on, baby, I'll take it. But no one stops to think about the responsibility for that or having that money, mm-hmm. and the ramifications of that.
You know, and it seems to me that grief is an intensely personal emotion. You could almost say selfish, not in a bad way, but it's very self-centered. It's all mm-hmm. about you. It's not about your loved one who's passed because they're gone. It's about the people that remain.
Right. It's about your experience of
your
that
experience
loss.
And, right. You know, and in a divorce situation, you know, maybe both are feeling grief, but maybe not.
Right. And if they, with that definition of conflicting feelings, they're both having their own conflicting feelings, and those conflicting feelings don't line up.
Right.
You know, so at one moment I'm feeling hopeful and optimistic and, oh, yeah, I've got another chance at life. And the ex is bitter and mad and hurt and feeling vindictive. And then we flip flop and, you know, it stays dicey.
Well, I can see even in a divorce where both parties are saying, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. They're adamant about it. But the bottom line is, They want a relationship now. There's a conflicting issue there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure there are individuals that can't stomach to think about an ex. But I would think there's got to be some foundational. There's some reason why you got married. So you know, I think you always are going to go back and say, well, what if? Why can't it be like it was? What changed? Why? And that type thing.
Well, and that you make a good point, because what happens with grief is until we resolve it, we are engaged sort of in a constant emotional relationship review. So we're thinking of all those, you know, what could have been better, different, and more. I should have done this.
What
and
should
he
have
should
I
have done that.
What did I do to cause
yes.
this?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Until we resolve that, we're having that ongoing conversation in our head.
Yeah.
Which affects our ability to deal with what's going on in the future, and it affects our ability to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I'm going into the next relationship carrying that whole conversation about the one that just ended with me, which isn't good for the new relationship.
Yeah. Right. Interesting. And the notion of sharing somebody's grief you know, that when you think about grief as being so intensely personal, then it's difficult to share it. It's your grief, and somebody can empathize with you, but it's difficult for them to truly share it.
Well, sure, because nobody can ever know how you're feeling, right? Yeah. If you lost your mother and I lost my mother, we've had a factual experience at the same.
Right.
But our emotional experience of it is totally different. Even mm-hmm. if my sister and I lost our mother and we had the same mother, our relationship with our mother is different.
Right.
And so
right.
the loss is going to be different. And the feelings that we're feeling at any given moment, because they're conflicting, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm only sad and she's only mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're both like these spinning constellations.
So in your business, then, you can have an approach to grief counseling, but it's going to be different every time. At the end of the day, the approach may be the same, but how people actually get through their grief and how they deal with it.
Sort of yes and no. Like, we use the metaphor of a flat tire for grief, and Sam said this last time, that healing isn't passive, that we actually have to do something. And so I teach the step-by-step method for how to change the tire, but every tire is different, and everybody's experience of changing that tire and everybody's articulation of how to change that tire is different, and yet the steps
right.
are exactly
the same. The tool they use might be different
yeah.
to change the tire. I mean,
yeah.
know, it may not be the same.
Kind of yes and kind of no. I mean, in terms of what I'm teaching, they're learning the same tools, but their experience of the tool is different. I say it's a little bit like being on a stage. You know, so if you're going to put a show on, we need a stage and we need seats and we need lighting and we need curtains. We need all that. But then when you get on stage, maybe you're doing, you know, a one-act stand-up thing, and you're mm-hmm. doing a drama, and somebody else is doing a comp. You know, like, the expression of it's going
right.
to be different, and yet the structure for the expression remains the same, which is actually, I think, very helpful, because then it doesn't matter what the loss is. We know what to do. Oh, we have these tools. Oh, we can do this. And the expression is going to be different, but I have the structure, and I can just drop right into it and then utilize it to recover, which gives us confidence in a time of life when we can be so void of confidence. You know, those losses can just do a job on us, you know. And so to be able to sort of grab onto something and say, okay, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, but there is something that I can hold on to. I'm not lost in the forest. I haven't just been abandoned here. There's a path, and I can take this path.
I think what you said, I mean, you have to address this. I mean, and I'm probably the world's worst for saying this, because I won't. I'll typically do the man thing. I'll put it in a box and close it and shut it off. And like I said, I'll fake it till I make
right.
it. But I can understand. And as I hear you talking here, Brad asked the questions. It's not, even though I'm suffering grief, my personal, and as Brad said, it's the grief is about me. It really isn't about me. Because everyone that I'm associated is in some way going to be tied or related or directed to that grief.
Right. They're going to be affected by it.
Exactly. Even Brad and I, in our business relationship, if I am grieving,
yes.
he's going to have it's going to affect him.
It is. Absolutely. And that's why we can't afford to not recover. Even if we don't care about ourselves, everybody else who we come in contact with is being affected
right.
by it.
Right.
Because we're more scared and we're more shut down and we're more isolated and that affects our business. That affects
yeah,
our
you know,
relationships.
And it's interesting, and that's where the notion of selfishness comes in. And my wife will talk about this all day long, because she looks at some of her family members and the way they've dealt with things, and you know, they think she's right in a way, because if you're not dealing with that grief, to your point, you're impacting
someone,
everybody around
yeah.
you,
right.
and you know they if they have to deal with you. They're impacted, and
that's right.
what the consequence could be is that you push those people away,
and
they say, "All right, if you're not mm-hmm. going to deal with this, I can't deal with you."
Right.
So, you know, and then that just exacerbates.
Right
the
now
problem.
We have another, and then now we have another loss.
Problem.
Right,
yeah.
So whatever loss led us to that original grief, now we've lost more relationships
mm-hmm.
on top of it,
yeah.
and so loss breeds more loss.
Well, let's go to the specifics, unless you have other details. But let's talk about the events, the issues that you were speaking of before.
All right, perfect. The two that really come to mind are moving and loss of health or physical changes.
And I'm really as soon as you said moving, I smiled. People do not believe that is a grieving, anxiety filled situation. Oh. I got to tell you, for me, Okay, go for it.
It's huge. I venture to say it's one of the most overlooked sources of grief. Because when you think about it, conflicting feelings about a change in a familiar pattern or behavior, when we move, every pattern, every behavior changes. And it doesn't matter if we wanted the move. We may be moving into the house of our dreams. Everything changes.
And you know, as you were talking, and I'm going, and if we're going to relate this to seniors who have just lost a spouse, and typically they're now going to say, okay, I gotta do something with the house, right, and I have to go somewhere. So now you've compounded it.
Yep. Yep. So at a time when you've lost your spouse, so you've lost major, everything's changed. And now your house too, and our homes are often, even if we don't like our home, it's still kind of our safe haven from the world. You know, whatever assaults are going on out there, okay, I can just go home and be at home and be alone and do my thing. And so to lose a spouse and then to lose the home is the two major, major losses right on top of each other, right? And even if you haven't lost the home yet, you know, you've lost the spouse who's helping you take care of the home. And the spouse, while you miss them, the grass also still has to get cut, and the groceries still have to be bought, and that's the right, bills still have to be paid.
And you've lost the relationships. And I mean, you know, I've been in the house 20 years. I have 20 years of relations with my neighbors, and they're important. And so you've lost that now.
Yes. Relationships and memories as well, because a lot of times you're moving into a smaller space. You can't take everything with you. You can't put all the pictures back up.
That's right. That's right. So it's a major, major change. I mean, we know the nooks and crannies of our homes, and we have sentimental things that happened in that. You know, oh, that was where this happened. And you guys, I imagine, probably hear these stories from your clients, right?
Well, it's funny. We get some of them, and we know in our conversations with them that it is a stressful time. Mm. But I don't think we are as attuned to how much stress. Mm. You know, we have a tendency to look like anyone else. Oh, she lost her husband. But it's not only losing her husband. It's, as you said, the home, the familiarity, the safe haven, the friendships, the memories. I mean, it is massive.
So here's a question. How do you provide preemptive counseling? So we've got, you know, a lot of our clients have they might have a sense that moving would be a grief causer, but you know, both from a perspective of the children and from the person that's going to move themselves, a lot of them don't really get it. You know, so is there a way to provide some of this counseling on a preemptive basis?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think number one, being really forthright with them and saying, you know, this is actually a really big deal. And some people aren't going to have an emotional response to it, but some are. And it may be that it's the person leaving the home, or it may be the kids. My mom sold her house for 42 years. I did the grief recovery method on that house and my relationship to that house, because that was the only house I'd ever known. Mm-hmm. And so we want to tell them it's a loss, it's a grief issue, and then we want to give them some tools for dealing with it.
Yeah, I think from the kids' perspective, they have no idea. You know, I mean, they're thinking, oh, well, mom can't take care of the house anymore. I can't be there to take care of it. And, you know, we'll just move her into assisted living.
And it'll be fine. This will be better.
Right.
Yeah.
This will be better.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which may be exactly right. That may be an intellectual truth, fact, but it doesn't mean that's what's going on emotionally,
right?
Because those things don't line up.
Is it? And from I'm thinking for Brad, is it reasonable to think that, as Brad said, you can prevent this? You can come in. For instance, we have clients, many clients, couples, and one of the spouse of the couples is terminally ill. I mean, we know, everyone knows what's happening. Can you proactively do anything to lessen that, or is it really dicey because of the emotion and all
one
that?
Step at a time sort of thing?
Yeah.
But sort of yes to all of it. It is dicey. I mean, you can do grief recovery in advance of the loss, which when we can get complete with what was and the unmet hopes and dreams and expectations, like this person is not going to still be here and this house is still not going to be here. You can work on that in advance. And sometimes when you're in the midst of it, you're just trying to get through it and survive it.
Yeah.
And so you don't.
Yeah.
But people need to know that there is something to do on the other side of it.
Yeah, even just acknowledging it's there.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you may not be able to work on it, but in a sense, you are working on it just by talking about it.
Right. And knowing that it's natural and normal and there's nothing wrong with you and you're not defective and you're not broken and you don't need to be fixed. You're just in the midst of a really natural, normal mm-hmm. grieving
Well, Sam's
incident.
Broken.
But well, of course.
Everybody
right.
knows that.
Well, we all are, right? We're all, I mean, to some degree, we're all a little bit broken.
It's funny how it never stops, but that's okay.
But I think sometimes we feel inadequate, like somehow, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should be better. I should be stronger. And it's just not how it is.
Yeah.
But moving is a really Amazing. Big deal. It's a really big deal.
So moving was the first one.
Moving was the first one. And one other thing that y'all can probably speak to better than I, you know, if I'm moving into, there was a woman that I knew who was moving into a retirement center. Well, she's still independent and her spouse isn't. And now is she going to move him in with her and mm-hmm. have to keep caretaking him, which she feels incapable of doing? And that feels bad. Or is she going to move him into assisted supported living? And that feels bad. Mm-hmm. So either way, she feels like she's making a bad, wrong choice. And yet neither choice is good. And that's hard.
And I can even take it further. You do that, as you said. One moves in, your example says, okay, I'm going to move him in and provide care, you know, this professional care for him so that we can be together. And then you start looking at the cost of that, and that's got to be another issue
right.
that, you know, even though it might be a better thing, maybe even though it might be the right thing, it's still got to be a difficult thing.
Right.
Well, women in particular are going to feel like they've failed if they can't continue to care for their husband.
That might be true.
Because they're natural nurturers, because they're the mom, when it comes around to that, that's what they want
to do,
and that's what they're supposed to do, and we see it all the time.
And we can get political as much as we want to, but that is an issue with females. Just like being able to provide for a male is foundational, and
yeah,
you can talk about
true.
It any way you want to. Those are true statements.
A guy is going to feel more ashamed of not being able to pay for home care
absolutely
than to be able to take care of his
right exactly
his wife
right. And so then in those situations everybody's conflicting feelings again, right? He's feeling badly about this and she's feeling badly about that, and everybody's bumping up against each other in a situation that's already hard. Mm. Are we making this move? Are we not making this move? How do we make this move? How do we pay for this move? Mm. Who's going to implement the care? It's a lot of questions, and they're hard questions without the emotional loss on top of it.
And then, you know, in addition to that, you have the loss of independence.
Absolutely.
You know, and I remember a story a family told me about their dad that they had put into an assisted living close to where Sam and I live. And he went wandering around one day looking for some cookies, and he was in the kitchen, and basically he got his hand spanked mm. for being in the kitchen at the wrong time. And the family was just really – they were so upset about it that they moved him out of there.
Wow.
But, you know, just – I mean, what do you mean I can't have a cookie?
When I want one. Yes. I've spent my whole life being able to get out of the kitchen when I want to get out of the kitchen. When
and
I want –
by the way,
when
I'm
I want to.
Paying you guys to feed me.
Right.
So give me a cookie.
Right. Well, and I had a client who moved – she and her husband moved to Atlanta from Macon because they anticipated we're getting older. We need to be near our kids. And she said she had no idea how big the loss was going to be. They, you know, had spent 42 years at their church in Macon.
Oh, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, here they are in Atlanta. And even though they think intellectually it's a good choice, and it probably is a good choice, there's still this radically different emotional experience.
It sounds like what we're talking about change.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. The human, mm-hmm. and again, I go back. Brad's heard me say this. I've heard people. In fact, I had a guy that I admired professionally, and he once told me he embraced change. And in my mind, I'm going, "You're a liar! I can't believe that." And of course, he's talking about all the opportunity and the new doors that are open and all this. Yeah, if you want to be that positive and look at it, I got to tell you, I just don't see it that way. I resist it. I resist change until I can say, okay, this is what we got to do.
Right.
I mean, you know, until it gets the rubber hits the road.
Brad knows. Look at Brad's looking at me.
He agrees. Yeah. Well, that's part of those conflicting feelings, because we can be very optimistic and hopeful and think it's a great opportunity and yet feel scared and doubtful and worried. I mean, when I got laid off, I was just like, I wanted to not be in that job anymore.
Yeah.
And yet it was still emotionally, I was like, me? I mean, I got laid off and how am I going to pay the bills? And
yeah.
I mean, it's scary. It is scary. It is scary.
Yeah, no doubt.
Any other examples there that you wanted to speak to?
Well, and then loss of health.
Okay.
Right? So yet another, I mean, because people tend to associate grief with death and sadness, loss of health, sort of in any form or fashion, can be a really, really big deal. And it shouldn't be overlooked or minimized. I mean, something as simple as losing our hair. Right? When we look in the mirror, that's our identity. The way we experience ourselves in the world is through our body.
Yeah.
And if we have had a loss of health, then all of a sudden that changes. That changes all those familiar patterns and behaviors. I can't do everything that I used to be able to do.
Yeah. I mean, it talks to the independence issue again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's got to be particularly difficult when you have to start relying on somebody else. You know, it's one thing for you to not be able to engage in the sports you used to be able to engage in. You know, certainly that's a loss, but it's completely different if you have to rely on somebody else to drive you because you can no longer see.
Right. Right. And that's a huge loss. Yeah. That's a huge loss. And people want to say, like, even this, even yesterday when my son graduated, I mean, I was excited and proud and hopeful, and yet I was feeling really sad, like, this part of my life is over. And everybody said, oh, he's not going to be that far away. Well, yeah, that's true. That's intellectually true. But emotionally, I still feel bad that he's not going to be in my daily life anymore.
It changes everything.
You know, and the fact, oh, you should be grateful your son lives so close and he'll drive you around. Well, yay, great, but I want to be able to drive myself.
Right.
I want to go where I want, when I want, how I want. I mean, if somebody came and took our keys away from us.
Right. And I don't want somebody to be asking me why I need to go there.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Because I want to.
Yes, yes. And now probably, I hadn't really thought of it before now, but probably if they're driving me around, now all of a sudden they have some attachment to how I'm spending my money when they're driving me around.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Do we really need to be doing this? So those that loss of health brings lots of changes in the familiar pattern of behaviors.
Is there good information. We are out of time. Is there anything we can do, as I said, proactively, as we see these changes that are going to bring grief and anxiety? Can we proactively do anything to lessen or eliminate that situation?
Well, we can. I mean, really what we all should learn is the skill set of grief recovery.
Okay.
We just need to learn it, you know, so whether it's in our own lives or stuff that's going on with our parents, we need to take the time, we need to learn it, we need to address our own grief. For people who won't do that, we need to make sure that we're not minimizing them and we're not speaking to them in those cliches.
And that's hard. I mean,
it is hard.
I'm the world's worst. I'm going to think it, you know, the first time I hear it is when I verbalize it. And that can be a good quality, but that's a bad quality when it comes to this situation. So somehow we all have to get attuned to the idea.
Right.
So what are the basics?
The basics of
the grief recovery skill set.
We need to know we have losses. We need to discover which relationships are unresolved, and then we need to discover what emotional communications need to be delivered, and then we need to deliver them. And they don't have to be delivered to the person, right? Because we might be doing grief recovery on the loss of our physical health, and so it's a relationship with ourselves and our body.
Yeah.
But we need to deliver those communications so that we're not just chewing on them.
Good.
You know, and when we can get complete, we use the word complete, when we can get complete with what was, my body was that way, my home was that way, my spouse was that way, then we can get okay with what is and be present for what is so that we don't lose what is because we're stuck on what was.
So I heard four steps.
Okay.
If we can go back over them. Number one was kind of acknowledge the loss.
Mm-hmm.
What was number two?
Discover which relationships have unresolved grief. And again, it could be a person, it could be a home, it could be a loss of hope, confidence, faith, intangible losses.
Okay.
Then we need to uncover and discover the undelivered emotional communications that need to get delivered. And then we need to deliver them. And we don't deliver them to that person.
Good advice. And I'm going to, you're probably going to repeat what you just said. At a high level, though, if someone's out there hearing this and they're recognizing one of these grief-producing events, changes in their life, what piece of advice can you give them as they see it coming?
Well, call me.
Okay.
Call me. There's the Grief Recovery Handbook that's available to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Go get help.
Mm-hmm.
Know that they're natural, they're normal, they're not broken, they don't need to be fixed, but they have to do something. And I used your words in a talk I gave recently, Sam. You said it last time. Healing is not passive. It takes action, and something has to be done. Time will not heal. Staying busy won't do it, and having a good attitude won't do it. So back to that emotional tire analogy, I say it's better to get out of the car with a bad attitude and kick that flat tire and change it than stay in the car with a good attitude hoping time's going to heal, because it's not going to do it.
Yeah, so, and I think a lot of people are pretty good at acknowledging their loss. I mean, it's obvious. Somebody dies, I've lost something. So what is the very next step?
The very next step is, well, that's a good question. It is to, I think, really not just acknowledge that there's a loss, but acknowledge that there is an impact. There just is an impact. And even if we think we're fine, and even if we think we're going on, it's there.
Yeah, acknowledging.
And something has to be done about it.
Something has to be done, right?
Acknowledging, then do something.
It's like taking a bullet to the heart and saying, oh, I'm fine. No, we actually, you know, even if it's not hurting us, even if it got lodged in some place that we don't even know it's there, we got to do something about it. And it's not going to get healed by finding another spouse and another job or another dog or another home. They're like unrelated things, right? I haven't addressed that wound just by getting a new something.
So you've got to do something, but you have to do the right thing.
You got that.
And avoid doing the wrong thing.
That's right. We got to avoid the drinking, the smoking, the shopping, the long list of things that
compulsive behaviors.
Yes. Yes.
And good information.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming back.
Thank you. We could have this conversation for
days. We'll do it again at some point.
Okay.
There's no question about that.
I would love that.
Tell our listening audience how they can contact you.
You can reach me at 678-653-5513. That's 678-653-5513, or Anne, at grief2relief, grieftorelief.com. And I do have an 8-week class that is starting June 23rd, meets once a week for 2 hours, and people learn this grief recovery method. It's $325. People can always work with me individually. That can start anytime, but the group will start June 23rd.
Where's the location of that group?
That's going to be at my office in Peachtree Corners,
okay,
right at Spalding and Holcomb Bridge.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure. My privilege.
That's it for today. We want to remind the listening audience that they can always go back and listen to a rebroadcast of the show at eugeriaradio.com. And as we always close, we want to say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.